You're listening to American Songcatcher, tracing the roots of American music from its cultured past to today's artists playing it forward. I'm folk musician Nicholas Edward Williams. During the early 20th century, when life and music were heavily shaped by the social and cultural conditions of the American South, Fred McDowell, later known as Mississippi Fred McDowell, was born 40 miles east of Memphis in Rossville, Tennessee. The exact year of his birth is debated. Those who remembered him as a kid attest that it was January 12, 1904, although the census and Social Security documents point to 1906 or 1907. The second child of two farmers who worked long, hard days during the Jim Crow era, Fred came into the world into hard times, especially after both of his parents unexpectedly passed away before he was a teenager, and his older, married sister soon took him to live with her in Mississippi. It was around the age of 14 that Fred first began learning to play guitar, inspired by one of the greatest early blues recording artists of the century. As he later told Fretz magazine, quote, "When I was a boy, the first blues record I ever heard was Blind Lemon Jefferson singing Black Snake Moan. Man, I tell you, I thought that was the prettiest little thing I'd ever heard."
Black snake crawling in my room. And some pretty mama had better come in. Get this black snake soon.
With the seed planted, Fred invested his time learning more about guitar through local and family musicians connected with his deceased father. Fred cited his uncle, a man named Gene Shields, as the first guitarist he ever saw playing in the bottleneck slide style. Uncle Gene had an unorthodox method of filing down a beef bone from a steak until it was smooth, and he would place it on his little finger and use it as a slide. The first time Fred tried it, he used a pocket knife to recreate the sound that his uncle made, which he continued to do later in life, though at the time, he found that an inch-long glass bottleneck piece from a Gordon's gin bottle had the ideal volume and punchy sound that he was looking for, especially once he wore it down to fit his finger perfectly.
I'm big fun, mama. Me singing on a bone. Time of me shake is all. Standing on the home.
The first song that Fred ever learned on guitar was Tommy Johnson's Big Fat Mama. He later recalled that, quote, "I learned it on one string, then two, note by note. I about worried that first string to death trying to learn that song." This approach was foundational to Fred's developing style, and he took lessons from everyone that he could, especially his neighbor and longtime friend, Eli Booster Green. Fred dedicated himself to guitar when his other friends were doing what teenagers usually do. He recalled that, quote, "They'd all be playing ball or something, and I'd be practicing on Booster Green's guitar." Fred supported himself by working on his late father's small farm and plowing fields around Rossville most hours of the week. And he got decent enough at guitar that he started performing on Saturday nights for fish fries, picnics, and country dances.
I've been drinking water, baby, I know.
Fred didn't want to plow behind a smelly mule all day for the rest of his life. So around age 21, in 1926, he moved to Memphis to stack sacks of yellow corn taller than he was at the Buckeye Feed Mill and occasionally played music for tips. Over the next 3 years, he worked other jobs like building rail cars, stacking logs, and working at an oil mill and a dairy before deciding to move to Mississippi around 1929. He worked as a full-time farmer picking cotton, and it was in Mississippi that Fred's sound cultured through traveling all over the state and the Delta area, meeting many different bluesmen who taught him different ways to let the guitar do the talking. In the late 1920s, while working at a camp near Cleveland, Mississippi, Fred went to a juke joint and saw Charlie Patton, Sid Hemphill, and his old neighbor, Eli Booster Green, perform. Seeing Charlie was a powerful experience for Fred. He took every chance that he could to play like that, despite not even owning his own guitar until over a decade later in 1941. He soon got married to Anne Mae McDowell, and they would eventually have 10 children. Among the challenges of poverty and racism that he faced throughout his life, he remained committed to his music and his community, often playing for free at local events and fundraisers. He did receive some criticism from the religious community for including social music in his repertoire, or to put it more bluntly, the devil's music.
Early this morning, he knocked upon my door. And I said, "Hello, Satan, I believe it's time to go."
By the 1930s, Delta Blues had made its way far from the local communities and into living rooms all across the country with the advent of recording technology and a string of successful blues musicians making the genre famous throughout the 1920s. By the end of the 1930s, however, at the onset of World War II, traditional blues fell out of favor with the public, and a new subset of blues developed at the hands of Big Bill Brunsey, Muddy Waters, and Howlin' Wolf, who all left the South and moved up to Chicago. Meanwhile, Fred stayed in the South, and around 1940, settled in the small town of Como, Mississippi, known as Hill Country, where he was exposed to the traditional music of the region, a rich tapestry of work songs, spirituals, and folk tunes. The wooded Hill Country around Como, where Fred spent much of his time, did not have large plantations like in the Delta, but many small farms, some of them owned by black families who had been there for generations. The rhythms of the fields and the songs that were fused with the manual labor became integral parts of Fred's musical sensibilities.
"I dear conductor, let me ride it blind."
Then, in August of 1959, folklorist Alan Lomax was recording traditional music in the region for the Library of Congress, and got word about Fred from a fife and drum duo named Lonnie and Ed Young, and folk singer Shirley Collins accompanied Lomax, taking field notes on what would later be known as their Southern Journey field recording trip. Fred was now 51 years old, and after just finishing his crop harvest that day, arrived wearing overalls and carrying a guitar to meet Lomax. He sat down, slipped a bottleneck over his finger, and played a mix of religious and secular songs. These were the first documented recordings of Mississippi Fred McDowell.
One, two, three, go.
To accommodate Fred's life as a farmer, they recorded at night by flashlight. Others also stopped by to accompany him on occasion, like Fred's wife, Annie Mae, who joined on lead or backup vocals. A friend named Miles Pratcher added a second guitar, and Fred's sister, Fanny Davis, added unique instrumentation of blowing on a fine-tooth comb wrapped in toilet paper on a few songs, making a kazoo-like sound. Over the course of four nights, they recorded 12 taped tracks outside with the natural ambiance. Alan noted that the katydids had largely gone quiet that time of year, so they were able to record in relatively calm night air, although they were occasionally interrupted by passing thunderstorms. In his book, The Land Where the Blues Began, Alan wrote that following the session, when they played the recordings back to Fred, quote, he stomped up and down on the porch, whooping and laughing and hugging his wife. He knew that he'd been heard, and felt his fortune had been made. His old auntie, sitting on the ground near me, kept patting me and saying, Lord of mercy, Lord have mercy. Despite Fred being relatively obscure and unknown, Alan knew that he was in the company of greatness. He added, quote, certainly it is a blessing that he was so thoroughly taped, for no one on records, perhaps, performed the sweet old country blues so well as he. His mellow, multi-tonal vocal style lends subtle pathos to every phrase of his songs and evokes eloquent responses from his gnarled and work-wise plowman's fingers. His journeys up the treble strings take us into the region of heart cries, or, at times, of tender ecstasy. You feel that the underlying mood of his music is as grave as the tragic destiny of his people. If the dancing beat that rocked the barrel house all night long rolls and jangles joyously. And so, on the four-volume collection of Lomax's field recordings from this trip, titled Sounds of the South, Mississippi Fred McDowell appears prominently. American Songcatcher is now in its third season as a completely independent program. While this podcast will remain free, we rely on your support as listeners to fund the creation of this show. Please consider making a small donation or contribute monthly to our Patreon community. It really means a lot to us. Also, American Songcatcher has now partnered with a 501c3 nonprofit, Music in Common, and now accepts tax-exempt donations, sponsorships, and advertising. Email americansongcatcherpodcast@gmail.com to find out how you or your organization can contribute. Now, back to the show. Drive down, baby, let you. Thank you. and two of Fred's field recordings appeared on a compilation called The Blues Roll On in 1960 by Atlantic Records. Fred's life changed significantly. After nearly 20 years of strictly performing around Mississippi and Memphis, Fred became in high demand all over the country, often receiving equal recognition with the other, quote, discovered blues artists who had been documented in the late 1920s and early 1930s.
But in a way, listen, I want all of everybody to listen. I really enjoyed myself here tonight because I love to play to you now, and I don't mind playing. I play what I'm not like nobody else. I don't try to play like nobody else. I just play what I know. When you play what you know, and you can listen at me and the guitar bow, he's going to tell you exactly what I say, you understand? If I sing a word, it's going to tell me right back what I say. Thank you.
He spent most of the 1960s being billed on the folk festival and coffeehouse circuit, in the studio, and performing throughout the U.S. in folk and blues clubs. All the while, though, Fred kept a job pumping gas on I-55 at the Stuckey's Candy Store in his hometown of Como, Mississippi, even though he was finally able to support himself as a musician. Stuckey's was essentially his office, where he would hang out with his friends and receive phone calls from booking agents and record producers.
And we'd call up Stuckey's, and I said, could I speak to Fred? Can you call back a minute? He's pumping gas. And come to find out later, he got calls from all over the world like that. And they'd send him plane tickets, send him to Stuckey's. And here he'd go. Off to Memphis and get on the plane, go to Europe, and this kind of stuff.
The timing was perfect, as the origins of the blues were having a resurgence along the Great Folk Revival, and Fred joined a roster managed by Dick Waterman, which included other prominent blues musicians, such as Mississippi John Hurt, Son House, Skip James, and Booga White, and he booked them all at many prominent venues, including the 1964 Newport Folk Festival.
Putting the festival together in the course of the year is listening to a lot of this music on records, people like Fred and Howdy Forrester and some of the others you've been listening to over the course of the last two or three days. And one of the real privileges of working with the festival is to get a chance to listen to these people live. It's a long way from Mississippi up here, and it's a long bus drive, and Fred and Ed Young and some of the others have made it two or three times here, and we're really privileged to have them.
Chris Strachwitz of Arhooly Records, who was instrumental in the recording careers of Lightning Hopkins, Mance Lipscomb, Big Mama Thornton, and the King of Zydeco, Clifton Chenier, got his first listen to the Atlantic record that included Alan Lomax's recordings of Fred, and immediately contacted him to find Fred's whereabouts. Chris promptly traveled to Como, where Fred was still living with his wife, and began a longtime friendship with them that included a great deal of recording.
I had hardly encountered anybody who played with a bottle like in that style. I mean, I had met Booker White, so on, you know, but Fred had this gorgeous melodic sound, or I don't know how to put it. You just have to listen to him, you know. I had never really heard anything like that.
I'm going down and grab them wanna take that right hand road.
In 1965, Fred was invited to tour Europe with the American Folk Blues Festival Tour, which included artists such as Big Mama Thornton, Big Shaky Horton, Buddy Guy, Dr. Ross, Eddie Boyd, Freddie Below, J.B. Lenore, John Lee Hooker, Lonesome Jimmy Lee, and Roosevelt Sykes. The annual tour was put on by German promoters from 1962 through 1966 and played a vital role in exposing American roots music to a new and appreciative audience abroad, particularly in the United Kingdom, where these concerts proved to be a significant eye-opener for the founding members of the British blues rock boom. Honey, don't you wanna go? After that tour in 65, Fred, who was in his 60s at this point, needed a break. He took several years off to spend time with family and friends back in Como. He did continue recording, however, extensively and in various contexts. Fred collaborated with his wife, Annie Mae, on albums released by Arhuli and Testament labels, and released an LP titled Amazing Grace, performing religious songs, accompanied by the Hunts Chapel Singers, a group from his church. There were also field recordings of Fred, documented by George Mitchell, one of the most renowned photo documentarians of roots and blues music in the US, who captured Fred's performances with harmonica player Johnny Woods. Lord, it's on road in morning. I've been laying down on my bed. Fred also worked with Blues Hall of Fame producer and writer Pete Welding, a leading authority and advocate for traditional blues and avant-garde jazz, and their collaboration showcased songs that Fred performed during his youth on the LP Levy Camp Blues, released posthumously in 1980. Well, I worked on that levee till I went stone blind. In the late 1960s, Fred also appeared at the Newport Jazz Festival and the Ann Arbor Blues Festival and released one of his most commercially successful albums, I Do Not Play No Rock and Roll.
They call me Mississippi Fred McDowell. And I do not play no rock and roll, y'all. I just play the straight and natural blues. And whenever you get somebody, you know, want to...
Recorded in Jackson, Mississippi, and released by Capitol Records in 1969. The album featured Fred on electric guitar for the first time with a rhythm section and had extended monologues where Fred spoke freely on various topics, including love, philosophy, making a living, and defining the blues.
This is what I want to understand, what you understand. The congregation, everybody don't know what the blues is. Now you take up when I was a boy, just like I first told y'all. My home was in Rawlsville, Tennessee. Okay, now what we call the blues now, at that time, you know what they call them? A reel. That's where the blues come from, a reel.
Fred recording on electric guitar was a milestone, as up to this point, he was known strictly as a hill country bluesman on acoustic guitar. Since the 1940s, Chicago blues had been synonymous with the electric guitar. Although the reaction to his electric bottleneck slide was mixed, Fred liked it so much that he never went back to his acoustic guitar. Just keep on your lap, oh. Keep on your lap. Keep on your lap. He was my lawler. Then, in 1971, Fred re-emerged with a special appearance at a venue that played an essential role during the folk and blues revival in the Greenwich Village area of New York City, the Gaslight Cafe, which was recorded and released as the album Live in New York.
You got to move. You got to move. You got to move, child. You
The Rolling Stones were heavily influenced by Fred's early recordings, and they wanted to put You Gotta Move on their iconic 1971 album, Sticky Fingers. They wanted to meet him in person, and over dinner, they gifted him with a nice suit and the news that they were going to record his song, which has remained in their live repertoire ever since.
You may be high, you may be low, you may be rich, or maybe poor, but when the Lord get ready, you got to know.
When Fred received his first royalties from that song, it was the most money that he'd ever seen. But more importantly to Fred was the fact that his music had inspired and found new life in another generation of performers.
I think it was around $10,000 or close to it from You Got to Move, from the issuance of the Rolling Stones. It was a zipper record, that's all I remember. It was on the one that had the zipper on the front. When I gave him the check, I'll never forget that, he said, "Well, I'm sure glad them boys like my music."
Not long afterward, Fred McDowell died at Baptist Hospital in Memphis on July 3, 1972, at the age of 68, after battling with stomach cancer. He was buried in the Hammond Hill Church Cemetery, just north of Como, Mississippi.
Hallelujah, hallelujah. Well, singing and praying with my stand on Jesus, singing and praying with my mind. Stand on, well, stand on.
20 years after his passing, on August 6, 1993, a memorial was placed on his grave by the Mount Zion Memorial Fund to replace his headstone, which had misspelled his last name, and can be found today in the Delta Blues Museum in Clarksdale, Mississippi. In the pouring rain, for a small crowd of still-living relatives, the ceremony was presided over by Fred's old manager, Dick Waterman, and was paid for by friends Bonnie Raitt and Chris Strachwitz.
Started school one Monday morning, I thrown my books away.
Mississippi Fred McDowell's music blended the pulsating juke joint grooves of the North Mississippi hills and the hard-edged sounds that he picked up during his years traveling in and around the Delta. He became so well known for the song Shake 'Em On Down that people called him Shake 'Em. And he forged a path for generations of hill country musicians that would come after him, most notably R.L. Burnside, who started out by playing his guitar at a house party, as well as Junior Kimbrough, John Mayall, and Rye Cooter.
Lord, when you get home, baby, please write me a few of your lines.
His neighbor and longtime friend, Eli Booster Green, had a song that became a signature of Fred's, called Write Me a Few Lines. And Bonnie Raitt, who started a mentorship with Fred when she was an 18-year-old Ivy League dropout, later recorded the song as well, bringing it to a much wider audience. In 2017, a documentary called Shake 'Em On Down, The Blues According to Fred McDowell, was released by filmmakers Joe York and Scott Beretta. They started the film in 2014, after York discovered a 10-minute documentary on Fred called Bluesmaker, made in the 1960s.
Fred McDowell lives in Como, a small town in northwest Mississippi.
He has played and sung in many places. Chicago, California, Newport, and places in Europe. He is probably best known for his style of guitar playing, an old style which he learned from an uncle years ago. Tuning his guitar to an open chord, he sometimes uses a glass bottleneck to slide up and down the strings.
York was both a filmmaker and radio producer, and Scott Beretta was a notable Mississippi blues writer, historian, and radio host. The two were most interested in the moment when Fred was, quote, discovered by Alan Lomax and Shirley Collins in 1959. Since Lomax passed away in 2002, they reached out to Collins, who was in her early 80s by this point, but they didn't hear back for several months. Eventually, she was able to get back in touch and said that she was in fact eager to recount the memories with Fred McDowell. So they flew to England to interview her, kicking off a journey that would eventually take them back to Fred's hometown of Como, Mississippi, to find out more about him.
We went down through Kentucky and Virginia, Alabama, but I suppose the greatest thing of all was the visit to Mississippi. We found Sid, and he's still there, and he remembered Alan, but he must have remembered his voice because he was blind by then. And Sid and Lucius Smith played, you know, wonderful old time music. It was just so captivating and with so much energy. And they introduced us to the Pratchett brothers, and they played with such incredible verve and energy and sweetness. And it was you just sat there, you know, thinking, I'm in heaven. This is such lovely, lovely music. Then we were introduced to Lonnie and Ed Young in Como, and that was extraordinary. It sounded so African to me, much more African than either the Pratchers or Sid had done. And when Lonnie and Ed suggested that we listen to a younger friend of theirs, a blues musician, I thought, no, don't break this spell. I don't want to meet him, don't want to hear anything else. You know, this is just about the best as far as I can gather. But the next evening, they had arranged for this man to come along, and out of the clearing stepped this slight figure, dressed in dungarees. He'd come straight from his, you know, cotton picking, and they introduced him as Mississippi Fred McDowell. And he played 61 Highway, and you knew immediately you were in the presence of a truly great blues musician.
Back then, they would have like house parties. They would meet together and play music at other people's homes. That was the thing for the weekend for the peoples in the neighborhood to come together and listen at them play that music. They could come and hear them and relax and dance, and it was just fantastic.
It was some juke joints around, but most of the juke joints was people houses, you know, where people just meet up and they just have fun. From Friday to maybe Monday morning, people might leave there and go to work, you know, like seriously.
The hour-long film points out the nuances that are often overlooked in blues, and that Fred, despite being often classified as a Delta blues musician, was actually a founding father of what's now known as North Mississippi Hill Country Blues. R.L. Burnside, who was mentored by Fred, would become the face of the movement.
This is one that I wrote myself. See my jumper hanging on the line.
Quote, this notion of North Mississippi Hill Country Blues didn't really exist in the 1990s. Fred stood out as an anomaly. He didn't sound like anybody else. You couldn't put him in any grouping, says York. There was a misconception by people who lived outside the area as to exactly what the Delta is. What this film helps to establish is that Fred was the godfather figure of this North Mississippi Hill Country sound. In the documentary, Fred elaborated on the visceral sense and commonness that playing the blues exhibits. Quote, the more you play,
the better you feel. You understand? Because you begin to play it off your mind. That's where the blues are. When you get off to yourself, then you see you studying. And if you can hit one of these things, you sit down and play you two or three pieces, your mind is out, and you get up, put it down, go to bed. You pacify it. You got that off your mind, what you're thinking about. That's where the blues is.
71st Mississippi Blues Trail Marker was dedicated to Fred in downtown Como, Mississippi, recognizing his legacy. He's been nominated for 2 Grammy Awards, and in 1999 was inducted into the Blues Hall of Fame. In the liner notes to Fred's album, This Ain't No Rock and Roll, producer Pete Welding described his sound as, quote, one of the most inventive, sensitive, and rhythmically incisive bottleneck styles to be heard on record. Late in his life, Fred McDowell said, quote, when you hear me play, if you listen real close, you'll hear the guitar say the same thing that I'm saying too.
Come on, be my baby. Come on, be my baby. I'll buy you down. I'll buy you down my ring. If you don't like that, baby, I ain't gonna buy you a dog.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load.
And that's all for episode 3 of season 3. Huge thanks to Tenali Rennick for volunteering your time on this piece. To support this program, join the Patreon community or send a one-time donation at the links in the show notes. Find American Songcatcher on Instagram, at American Songcatcher. And if you're using Apple Podcasts, please make a rating and review. Huge thanks to the community on Patreon for your continued support of this independent program. Our intro song is Payday by Mississippi John Hurt from the Today album. Our outro song is 16 Tons, performed by Tennessee Ernie Ford, originally written by Merle Travis. This episode was produced, edited, recorded and distributed by myself, Nicholas Edward Williams, with writing and research by Tenali Rennick. In the words of Mississippi Fred McDowell, I don't play no rock and roll, I play the natural blues. Here's the songs of old, may they live on forever. See you next time on American Songcatcher.
Make me walk the line, you load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.